Colonel Jones, Reel 5. So you've just been telling us about how that one chap
was killed, yes.
Was killed. I'd just like to know a bit more about that. I mean, the corporal actually shot him to stop him.
Yes, with a step.
Line.
Well, I think he's. I believe this boy was shouting, "The Japs are coming." So there was no need. He was obviously one of ours. And I shouted, "Stop running." But, yes, it was a blast of a Sten gun that killed him. I was very angry with that.
Did you know who'd fired?
Yes. But not much you can do about it under those conditions, I feel.
What did the men think about that?
I don't think it got a... Well, they may have talked to me. They didn't talk to me about it in front of me anyway. Yeah. And there were Japs around us, so one could always have said that it was a Japanese who fired it. You know, we were almost sharing the same hole in some instances there. When dawn came, somebody said there were two Japanese in the... not sewer, but the waterway. There's a pipe running under the road, and it was, you could see through, normally see right through. It was probably about 2 feet wide, I should think. So I went to look, and I saw a pair of boots and dragged the chap, and it was a Japanese. He was dead, and there was another one in front of him. So I crawled in the pipe, got hold of this chap, started to inch my way back, and I felt a kicking movement, and then there was a loud bang, and I had a corpse on my hands again. Dragged him out. He'd put a grenade to his head, pulled the pin, and in a tunnel like that, it's an enormous bang. Anyway, well, I felt it made it easier for me. I didn't have to get rid of him myself, because that's all I would have done.
What did you do with Japanese prisoners?
To start with, well, I think always we tried to be humane about it, hand them back. I think if it was hand-to-hand combat and there was a chance of him turning on you, you didn't give it a thought. But once you've got a prisoner as such disarmed, and I'd taken one or two before that, you treated them, I think, as human beings, although no right to be, I felt at times. But I took one prisoner at Tamu, just beyond Tamu, and he spoke English. And he started to cry and showed me photographs of his family. And he didn't have a revolver, and I asked him where his pistol was. He said it was in Barmer. Well, Barmer was about 400 miles away, so I thought it was rather a long way to go without a pistol. That I didn't quite discover. He was pretty badly, he wasn't wounded, but he was in a pretty bad way. In fact, I fell over him in the long grass, so I didn't really take him prisoner. He almost gave himself up to me. But and then outside Mandalay, we took two prisoners, and I told the corporal to take a man with him and take him back to battalion headquarters. But within about 2 minutes, there was a burst of fire, and the corporal came back and said, "They tried to run away, sir." Well, then I discovered that he'd lost a mate only a week before in a battle, and he was settling, evening the score.
So really, the soldiers, the other ranks' attitude to the Japanese really hardened.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
They had no respect for them as fighters. They had no respect for them as fighters.
Well, I think they had respect for them, their bravery. They were always prepared to die. But they still had a hatred and still a fear of them. Even when we were winning hands down towards the end, you still... the same chap could kill you as he could have 2 months earlier. So I think you didn't take any chances. But I was always very careful to make sure the target we were aiming at and shooting up, either with rifle fire, machine guns, or artillery, was a Japanese party, not one of our own.
Were you at that time, or were the men at that time, aware of the conditions in the Japanese prisoner of war camps where they were holding Allied?
No, I don't think we knew very much about it. We didn't. The news hadn't got through well. I don't think anybody knew then the condition they were in. They assumed they were being used as labour, which was reasonable, but not the conditions that we discovered later.
Went on.
Yes, then we went on to Mount Popper, which was an enormous 4,000 feet high lump of lava, cool lava, a very holy place with the Burmese, and this thing towering in front of us like a skyscraper almost. And we knew that once we were told that once we'd cleared that, we were going to be pulled out back to India. Well, nobody wanted to stick their neck out and stop a bullet in the week that was coming, so we kept our heads down pretty low, and then the brigadier came up and said, look, you've got to do something, you've got to do it. So we said, oh, we'll do it manana. And eventually I think after about 3 days we decided that we would go in.
When you say we decided, that would be
The CO.
Right.
Yes, the CO decided that we would go in. And we were going in on the tomorrow, shall we say, and that afternoon a signal came through that every battalion had to send one officer and a certain number of other ranks back to India to receive the battalion, which was would have been pulled out the next day after the battle. So I was, the CO told me to go, and I can see it now. I was driving, I got the jeep, Sibley, King, my driver, and another jeep, four or five chaps in, one per company, I think, for the new site. It was to be near Calcutta. And I was to go back about 10 miles to an airfield and get lifted out. And as I was pulling out across the front, it was fairly open. And this, I must have been within the arc, or almost within the arc of this gun that was holding us up at Mount Popper, and a couple of rounds were fired and they missed hopelessly, they were way out. And the funny thing, I thought at the time that that was probably the last shot I was going to hear in anger. I didn't know anything, but I had a feeling somehow or other as I pulled away, and it turned out to be. As I came back to India, 2DIV was disbanded, and I was then put on to another job, brigade major, because I had the longest, they'd been in Burma or in India 6 months longer than me. I'd done 3 years and they'd done 3.5 and they were due to go, so I had 6 months to go. And Operation Zipper was coming off, the invasion of Malaya and relief of Singapore. So I got a job as a brigade major of one of the assault brigades.
What date would that be?
That would be about May 45. Yeah.
Had you heard about VE Day?
Oh, yes. I remember hearing that. I was standing on a hill in the Arakan when the message from General Eisenhower to the people of France was broadcast, or to the world, really. Yes, I remember that. I can see it now. We had our victory, and this was their start. And, of course, I had the 3rd Mons would have been in. I didn't know. They weren't in the D-Day invasion. They were D plus 5, I think. And 5 or 6 of them were old friends of mine. They had been with me for years. And then I got 2 or 3 letters. Rich had been killed from Merthyr in about the 2nd week or something. Then Ken Runnels, then David Kay, and who was the other, the 4th? There were 4 killed in a very short time. So I was very glad then that I'd stopped the East African show, and didn't go to East Africa, and stayed in Burma. Mm.
Did you celebrate VE Day? I mean, did you celebration? You just
D-Day.
V-E-Day,
May. We didn't, strange to say, because we were getting ready for Operation Sipper.
Yeah, right.
And...
But you obviously heard.
Oh, yes, heard it straight away, yes. Yeah. And then I remember I was down in my saw when I went down with the brigade colonel to see a battalion training. And on the way back, we stayed at a hotel. And the manager said, have you heard of the big bomb being dropped? That's the first I heard of the first atom bomb. Then the second one came, and the brigadier had been invited to dine with one of the Gurkha battalions that we had. And they were going to do the ceremony of killing of a goat or something. So he took me along with him, but just about the day before or that morning, I had a signal to man the telephone from 6 o'clock onwards that evening. So I guessed it was a ceasefire. So I got the intelligence officer, I think, to stand in by the telephone. And we went off. And at about 10:30, we were getting to a pretty drunken state. The a messenger arrived with the order, ceasefire from midnight or something like that. So we continued the celebration, and that was the about the end of the war, yeah. August, and then I came home in November.
Right. So Operation Zipper, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen. It was
right.
It went in as a peaceful.
What preparations did you have for that operation? I mean,
we were doing normal infantry work. And a bit of landing from landing craft. We didn't know quite what sort of landing craft we were going to get, but we were told to expect to go into about 2 feet 6 of water and wade for about 100 yards, like the Normandy landing should have been, with not the opposition and certainly plenty of support behind us, you know, with the rockets, because these multi-barreled rocket things have made a big difference to warfare. So that was it, and I came home in November, and the Territorial Army, of course, was suspended, and it suspended animation for a year.
So leaving your final place you were at in Asia was exactly where?
In the middle of India, called Kola Goldfields, near Bangalore.
Right, so that's where you'd been.
That's where I finished, yes.
Yeah. Mm. What was that like at the end of the war, and what was the mood like?
Well, I think we were all too busy wondering what was going to happen to ourselves to worry about anybody else. That's in my impression now. I had a certain amount of work to do, but we were really keyed up to do an operation, and that was now cancelled, and heaven knows what was going to happen to everybody. I mean, the Gurkhas were worried what was going to happen to them, and the British battalion with them. When were they going to go home? Yes, I think, obviously, relief. But I can't remember thinking very much about it except day to day.
So there was no sort of... how did you actually get back? Did you come back on your own, or did you come...
Oh, no, it was all very highly organised. One reported, as far as I was concerned, to Pune, a lot of us were. They weighed your kit and you were invited to hand in any surplus, which the people there were trading into the bazaar, so I understood. They were making a fortune out of it. But you were only allowed £40 or whatever it was. From Pune, I went to Pune by train. Oh, no, first of all, I went back to the dreaded Deolali. That's right, that's where we all assembled. Back to Deolali. I was there for about a week. Then to Pune by train. Pune to Karachi by air. Karachi home, various, in a Dakota. I remember circling over Habaneh, which is now Baghdad, and seeing 4 or 5 crashed aircraft on the strip. Apparently they were, I've forgotten, they were converted bombers, and they weren't behaving very well, apparently, with troops on board, and the thing to do was to try to get a lift on something else if you could, and I fortunately was in a Dakota. I remember I was the senior officer on board, and the pilot said, we got too many on board to take off. Well, there were Indian carpets and rugs there, which the crew had bought and was taking home. And so I said, well, you get those off first, and then I'll get some chaps off to balance the payload if you like, but those go first. He said, well, I'm not doing that. After another hour, you take the risk and take off on your own. So we went, he risked it, and we got off the last couple of yards, I presume, but he wanted to smuggle these things home. And when we got the other end, that's right, I remember it well, he said to the customs chap, see you in the morning, Bill, and left the stuff on the aircraft, and that would be collected later, apparently. So there was a bit of a racket going on.
That was RAF.
Yeah, yes.
Right. So you landed on where exactly in Britain?
Lynham.
Right.
Yeah. And then up to London for one night and back to Hereford, where most of the Welsh were demobbed, I believe.
So what were your feelings being back in it?
Oh.
Green and very, down Britain.
Very elated, I think, yes. Mm. Happy it was all over, that I could manage my own life for a change.
The one thing you haven't mentioned at all, which you're the first officer I've spoken to, but all the other ranks I've spoken to have all talked about the comradeship.
Comradeship. Yes, I think, yes, I that was undoubtedly so. Amongst the chap next to you in the slit trench, I think. Yes, or under fire.
Comradeship. I mean, you were obviously an officer.
Well, yes, I think one had to be careful and try to maintain a very faint line. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yes, I was a little surprised at Sibley when he can bloody well stay there. In fact, his language is stronger than that. But I laughed. I thought, well, fair enough. I wasn't going to send him anyway. It was just a comment. He didn't have binoculars, so I couldn't have borrowed his, but the fact that I'd suddenly discovered I was without a pair of binoculars, and to get his comment, I think I'm bloody well stay there.
Yeah. What was your relationship like with Sibley? I mean, you were with him.
Oh yes, time. Yes. Well, we used to discuss everything and quite chatty. Although I don't think I ever asked him about his parents. He certainly wasn't married, but I don't remember asking him a lot about it.
Do you remember his first name?
No, I don't.
What was his rank?
Oh, private.
Private. Yeah. Mm. So you were with him for a while. Did you say
nearly a year. Nearly a year, yes. Yeah.
Did you say fond goodbyes when you left? Or
I think I did, yes. I think and I gave him a couple of hundred rupees, I think. I got him to see me to the station to get my kit on board the train. And then he reported back and he was probably giving up a pretty cushy job. But then he was going home. I think he was due for repatriation anyway. So he was on cloud nine.
Right.
Mm.
So everybody was keen to get back from these.
Oh, yes. No yes. Of course, we had the election, which surprised most of us, I think. When was that? Was that
45.
Yes, about midsummer. I mean, like about May or June. Do you remember, darling?
May.
Mm.
Soon after VE Day, was it? Yes. So there was a great feeling of change. So when you came back, you said you had one night in London. Yes. Did you celebrate?
No.
No.
I think I was probably tired. And I suppose the blackout, yes, I suppose the blackout had finished. And I can't remember much about it. Mm. It was a pretty dreary sort of bit. They put us up in a hotel, but I can't remember sleeping there. But I know, so I certainly did. Mm. And then back by train to Hereford the next day.
So what was the atmosphere like to be back in barracks in Hereford? Where you'd started?
Yes, I think as far as I remember now, I met a couple of chaps there that I had known before the war, and one talked about where one had been and that. But generally, I suppose my mind was really focused on tomorrow when we went home. Mm.
So tell me about the demob procedure. What did they do to you?
Well, you started off in Lynham. They sort of clocked you in off the plane. Then you went to London and signed a couple of forms. I can't remember what they were about now, but I thought they could have done it. It didn't seem to be any point in taking us to London because we could have done what we did in Lynham. I didn't think it was a medical. No. And then we got to Hereford and were given a choice of a suit or a jacket and trousers, Trilby hat and a raincoat, and so on.
You just signed out.
That's right, yes.
What did you bring with you out of the army? You brought a revolver or...
No, I can't remember handing it in, but I certainly got rid of it. I'd slept with it for 3 years, strapped to my wrist, under my pillow, and I was afraid that one night I was going to put it in my head and blow them, you know, in a dream or something. So I was jolly glad to get rid of it. But I didn't fire a revolver, I only fired my carbine. That was a lovely repeating rifle sort of thing, and a lightweight. They're still using it, I believe, in the American army. I got mine from a Chindit.
Okay. How did you get it from a Chindit?
Well, they were coming back through us. We were at Imphal. We were put out to hold the line, so to speak. And they came down and with their mules. You couldn't tell the difference between a mule and a Chindit at times. I felt they all looked the same.
So, leaving Hereford, I mean, there were lots of you sort of being demobbed at the same time. I mean, did you all say goodbye or go and have a drink?
I don't think we did. I don't know that drinks were all that what's the word I'm looking for? Prevalent is a word that comes to my mind, but not quite the right one.
Yeah.
Not all that of it about, I don't think.
Yes,
I think
yeah.
If you got a pint, as much as you want, and I wasn't a beer drinker anyway. So
you went your separate ways.
That's right, yes, yeah. We did. As quickly as possible.
And you came back here.
And then, army-wise, I rejoined the 3rd Mons in... When was it? The 3rd Mons reformed as 637 3rd Mons Heavy Anti-Aircraft Regiment in Abergavenny. And I joined them as a battery commander until 1957 when I was given command of it. 1954, command of 637. Then in 1957 it was amalgamated with 638 Leitergag Regiment of 53rd Division. And I was given command of that, so I did 2 tours of command of artillery regiments.
Right. And where were you?
Abergavenny.
You stayed in Abergavenny?
Yes. Oh, no. We moved to... halfway through, we moved to Brecon. Mm-hmm. That's right. I finished up at Brecon.
And what were the... I mean, the war was over, but you were still in the army. Why did you stay on?
I don't know, because I liked it, I suppose.
Because you could have left and you could have gone to... Because a lot of people were very keen to leave.
Yes, they couldn't get out quick enough. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Mm. Mm. In fact, very few rejoined the 3rd Mons of the old 3rd Mons.
Did you ask people to stay on?
Yes, I did. I got the sergeant major, got the regimental sergeant major to stay with me.
What was his name?
Davis. Mm-hmm. Good old Welsh name. A couple of officers I got as well, yes. Mm-hmm. Who had been in France with them. And then in November, at the end of 1959, that's right, I gave up command on New Year's Eve. 59, I retired, and I was given the rank of brevet colonel, and I got an OBE. I got an MBE in the Air of Cairn, and that's right, I forgot about that, in 43, 44.
What did they give you that for? Was it for a particular?
No. What happens is that after a battle, they assess how many troops are involved, and they allocate a certain number of decorations according to the strengths of the participating units. And I got an MBE for the Air Academy, and the OBE was for commanding. It was normal to give an OBE after a full tour of command of a TA regiment, so I got that.
So were you aware in your period after the war in Abergavenny that you were, could be sent to Korea? Or?
Oh, no, I wouldn't have been then. No, we were there. As a territorial, you were exempt from... You could be embodied, but only with an act of parliament, and that had finished at the end of the war, so there was no question of me doing any more.
Right, so yeah. you were
So I was, yes.
Yes, yeah.
And then in 1960, the Jones brother had been the commandant of the Gwent Army Cadet Force previously, and then somebody had come in between and fallen sick or something, fallen out, and they were in dire straits. So I went to the Army Cadet Force as the commandant for 3 years. You remember that?
Yes, I do. Mm. Right.
1960-1963.
So that was about the end of your military service.
That was about the end of it, yeah. Yes. I was getting on a bit long into the tooth then.
What do you think the effects of your fighting experience are on you? What were they at the time? I mean, did they change you? I don't think
they did. It seems to have had very little effect on me. Looking back at these people who get stress and that nowadays, I wonder what was wrong with me.
it had a big effect on some people, didn't it?
Possibly did, yes. I think I used to take every day as it came. Except that it was inevitable, you know, and make the best of it. Mm. I decided on New Year's Day 44, when I had these three shots at me over the period of the day, that I would never grumble again, you know, if whatever happened, that I'd survived that and all would be well. So.
Yeah.